Give up on life.
I thought he shrugged. He said, the hell with libertarianism.
All right.
I thought he was imitating Creighton, passed out on the couch. Oh, sorry.
Oh, God.
That didn't record, did they? Cut that out.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. Third time's the charm. Here, your host, your professional radio engineer. I work for a national radio show, and yet I have failed to record the first two times we have started this program. Across from me, as always, is Greg Lins. Greg, how are you?
You know, it's funny. I always thought that maybe, you know, Indianapolis was just too small a market for all these political commentary shows. And now I'm starting to think that the reason Abdul had the absence from the air was you undermined him. And just you just decided, I'm not going to turn on the mics today. We're just going to broadcast dead air.
Believe me, that happened plenty of times when I was running the board. That's why I don't run the board for the national radio show. I run the Twitter. I'm good at that. Also joining us, our duo of racism insurance as we hit the hot topics today. First, Harry Price, how are you?
I'm going good. How are you, Chris?
I'm well. Back from Pork Fest.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Looking spry and tan. Mm-hmm. and then all joining us over Skype from lovely... Are you in South Bend or Mishawaka?
Granger, actually.
Granger, okay. It's all the same to me. Granger, our good buddy, our favorite parallel Mexican, Joe Ruiz. Joe, how are you doing?
Good, good. It's been a while. How are you?
I'm doing well. We'll get to...
as good as I was the first and the second time you asked me.
Now, we'll get to you in a minute, but we have to talk about this parallel Mexican thing. It's taking off. It is starting to take off. We are in a few brutalist groups. I am not a brutalist. I am not brutal in any way, shape, or form. I have glass jimmies. But I love watching and lurking these groups because of the memes. And we have orchestrated a bit of a coup today. One of our buddies, John Upton, was the admin of this 1,000-person group. Made James Neese the admin. Carnage ensued. Joe, what is your... You've never been in a brutalist group. You were in for about an hour. What was your impression of brutalism?
All I remember is that I was getting massive notifications on my phone that so many people were posting things in this, and I already get a bunch of them from the We Are Libertarian secret group and from emails and Twitters. There's just so many notifications that blow up my phone, and then I click in, and I see a naked dead girl.
Which, to my knowledge, she is not actually dead.
Yeah, she was naked, but she—I don't know that she was.
And that was a 4chan joke that took off. And
I didn't get the joke, but all it said was like too soon.
Yeah.
Just like what the hell? It's like this: some woman died. They took a picture of her, posted it, and said too soon. That's where my mind was at.
Yeah,
I'm not going to be a part of this. So I just checked out.
So Greg discovers another group today.
Well, I just got added out of nowhere by a listener who started this group. I won't mention his name on air just in case he doesn't want me to, but it is Parallel Mexicans for Closed Borders, and what it is after Jonathan Upton so unceremoniously made James Neese an admin, and then James proceeded to kick out every single other admin except for me and Jonathan Upton's pseudo account.
And then he changed his official Facebook name to Brutalist Overlord James Neese.
Yes, he actually changed his entire name. Then he started eliminating people and kicking them out. Just basically changed the entire group, did everything he could to get people upset. And you really can't get these individuals upset, but what you can do is annoy them to death. And that is what has been happening. And but so I get added to this group out of nowhere, and I'm like, what is this? Well, it is the people who are none too happy with James' rise to power and his his drunken power surge that he's been on for the last about 24 hours. And they named it the Parallel Mexicans for Closed Borders, and it has been growing. And I'm shocked they have added me, as I am one of the last remaining admins that has any sort of oversight of James Neese, and I've instead decided to just let it unfold.
Now, isn't that redundant?
What?
Isn't Parallel Mexicans for Closed Borders, isn't that redundant? Like, I thought the original definition of a parallel Mexican was kind of like a Mexican or a Hispanic person who works against the better interests of his people, like Marco Rubio being against better relationship with Cuba.
As I understood it, a parallel Mexican was any Hispanic who was not Mexican.
Yes, yes, that's what it is. So it has nothing to do with the intent of the promotion of Hispanic progress. It has, it has everything to do with everyone. Everyone is a Hispanic or is a Mexican, and even if you're not a Mexican, you're just parallel Mexican. you are just on the spectrum, if you will. Everybody falls on the spectrum of Mexican.
It was James Neese's brain's convoluted way of, like, pointing out the silliness of racism while being racist at the same time.
Yeah.
So
sort of brilliant, even, but. Yeah, it's. I mean, both groups are for awful people.
5 minutes in, yep. I am recording. So, let's go. Let's go up to Granger and talk to our buddy Joe, because Joe has an interesting life. While Greg seems to have it together. Harry's going to Pork Fest and Gen Con and doing all kinds of fun things. Excuse me, I'm eating Donatos, so I'm a little hiccupy. Things as always are so interesting with me. Now, Joe, you made a major career change recently.
I did.
You left what to do what?
I had spent about 2 years working in radio sales. And toward the end of it, I was fortunate enough to be a part of a program that we put together called the Ale Underground. You can still look it up. We're still recording it every week. But I went ahead and left the sales side of the business because I felt like I had this price tag on everybody's head, and it was kind of annoying to a person who's not real numbers or money driven. For me, I'm very relationship driven, and I hated the idea that if you and I have a good relationship, if I'm a couple thousand dollars short of my goal for that month, then instead of me and you being able to say, hey, you know, it's cool that you're giving me $4,000 this month, you know, you and I are bros or whatever, then I have to think, well, maybe I should ask them for the additional 2,000 or at least an actual 1,000. And if I go back to the office and I didn't ask them for that, then am I going to be given a hard time by my supervisor or something like that? So I just felt like every positive relationship that I had in my life for a period of time had some sort of money attached to it. And I didn't like that feeling. So I spent a lot of time complaining, a lot of time talking about it with my wife, and then eventually just decided I was going to get out. And a short time, like just a few days after I got out, I got a call and they said, you want to come be an extra in a Spike Lee movie that we're filming in Chicago, which is like huge because I wanted a creative outlet. That was my biggest deal, was that instead of being in a numbers business, I wanted to be something where I could kind of, you know, creatively live. And I am still writing part-time for a marketing company and doing some content creation and stuff. And there's a little bit of my creativeness that kind of goes into that. But that's kind of formulaic. I wanted something a little more. I wanted something a little deeper. And then I got the opportunity to come work on this Spike Lee film. I did 10 days on that in a few different roles. And then all of a sudden, I'm meeting people. I'm learning about different casting agencies, talking about different opportunities. And I haven't had a week since the beginning of June that I haven't been involved in some sort of project, be it a TV show, a movie, or a commercial. And I'm going to keep doing that for a while, except now it also kind of makes me a little bit hungry because I'm like, well, I'm sitting next to these people who are, you know, prominent celebrity people, and they're giving lines and I'm watching them and I'm kind of studying how they do things. And I'm like part of the process, but I'm like, I could do what they do. And so now I'm kind of interested in getting
Can you name drop a little bit? Who have you met? What shows have you been on? That sort of thing.
Yeah, so the first movie was a ton of people. It was Chirac. It's this movie coming out in December, theatrical release. They wanted out in time to be a contender for the Oscars. But it is the Spike Lee movie. So Spike Lee, obviously. But Samuel L. Jackson was part of that. John Cusack, Jennifer Hudson, Nick Cannon, Lala, who is Carmelo Anthony's wife and also star of a show right now called Power that's very popular. D.B. Sweeney, not Cooper, is the treasure guy. D.B. Sweeney. And then Harry Lennox, who's from The Blacklist on NBC. I think Steve Harris, also from Tyler Perry's Diary of a Mad Black Woman and several other movies. So all those people were involved in that first shoot. Then I went on to another movie that starred Jake Johnson from New Girl. And he's going to be in a movie with Joe Latruglio, who's been in Role Models and I Love You Man and several other comedies that I'm a fan of. And then just most recently, I did 2 days on Empire. And so Terrence Howard, obviously, Taraji P. Henderson are the main characters in that show. And they're both fantastic actors.
Have you had any sex scenes yet?
I have not had any sex scenes, but I did get in my underwear for Spike Lee.
What?
Yeah.
Did you shake it at him? What did you do?
Yeah, you know, I could actually tell you a funny story. So the idea was a dance scene where these National Guard soldiers are trying to woo these women. And basically, there was a point where they ran out of boxer shorts to give to the extras. We're all wearing these, like, uniform white boxers. And one of the guys says to the people in wardrobe, he's like, hey, you know, I got some white underwear in my car that I can go grab. Well, they were white boxers, but they were more like boxer briefs, and they were very, like, spandexy, you know, like something you would see, like, a bicyclist wear or something.
You couldn't conceal anything in these briefs.
We saw your Dorito Loco.
This guy puts on these shorts, and he goes out, and I just remember Spike Lee is kind of, like, pacing past the National Guard guys, taking a look at what he's about to be shooting, making sure everything looks the way he wants it. And he looks at this kid, and he looks down, and he sees the bulge. And he just goes, my man, why are you wearing that? And he's like, well, they ran out of boxers, and they told me that these would be okay. And he goes, mm-hmm. And do you want to tell me why you thought it would be a good idea to stuff? And the kid just goes, personal acting choice? And he goes, okay. You wait right there. I'm going to have them go buy you some boxers.
Aww.
And so he did. He had someone run out to, you know, Walmart or wherever else and buy a pair of white boxers for this guy so he could match everybody else. Apparently he didn't want to see all that.
Aww.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Well, it would have been like the baby from American Sniper. You remember when that kid had the fake bulge?
I told him, I said, dude, no matter what happens, you are always going to have this story of Spike Lee asked me why I was stuffing.
Now, do you lose your libertarian card for playing a cop and a soldier in a liberal Spike Lee movie?
Not any more than any Christian who's acted in a post-apocalyptic movie as the Antichrist would lose his Christian card. Or, you know, somebody in Atlas Shrugged.
You heard it here first, folks. Here on WAL, we have breaking news. Joe Louis starts a feud with Stephen Baldwin. Calls Kirk Cameron the Antichrist. Somebody send that to E immediately.
Oh, man.
So so that is very cool, Joe. You're living the dream. You're driving for Uber. You're writing for a living. You're acting in all these shows.
Officiating
weddings,
doing God's work.
How pissed is your wife at you
for doing all the things that I'm doing?
Yeah, like because you know, I imagine the wife's like, I'm here taking care of these kids.
You know, it's funny because when I first started, she was like, yeah, I don't care how you make money as long as you're helping to, you know, bring home the bacon or whatever. Like, it's cool. And so, like, that for me was like, yes, green light. I can go do whatever I want and make money wherever I can get it. And, you know, I can just, because for me, like, that's what fires me up. Like, that's what gets me really excited is not doing the same thing every day, but like waking up in the morning and saying, okay, how am I going to go out and make this happen? And like being creative about it. That kind of lifestyle, there's something about it to me that makes me really excited. And to her, as someone who is like who needs predictability and some right. level of normalcy, like, yeah, it has already after a month and a half or so, she's had a few moments where she was like, I don't think I like this, you know. And I'm like, well, things are obviously going to have to change when the kids go back to school. After the summer of Joe has come to an end.
Oh,
oh, that is a low blow.
Ouch.
Wow.
The summer of Joe.
That's what I deemed it at the very beginning.
Man, that is brutal.
See, you triumphantly declared it the summer of Joe. That was your own fault. You shouldn't have done that, because what is declared in triumph always ends in failure. Ask Caesar.
It just, you know, it just seems like showing off at a certain point.
It's been a success.
It has.
At this point. And so, you know, next month my son will start preschool and my daughter will go back to first grade. And I will, in addition to the marketing, writing, and the Ubering, find some other kind of normal Joe job to get me through until next summer, and then I'll start doing this stuff all over again. The only difference is that I'm going to, you know, try and get a foot in the door as far as doing some acting, even if it's with local theater or something like that. I know they're going to do like a Christmas Carol in South Bend. I'll probably audition.
Are you going to be Scrooge?
Yeah.
All right, let's hop into the topic.
I'm a libertarian. I have to be Scrooge.
15 minutes in, still recording. So this week, we're going to talk a bit.
With the burr?
We're going to talk about stuff. We're going to talk about things.
Highly controversial things, in fact.
Yeah. We're going to try and not talk about abortion, but it probably will happen.
Oh, we're totally talking about abortion.
Third rail.
We've never actually talked about it on the show before. But first, I think we need to get to Sandra. I want to say Sandra Fluke because my brain is flip-flopped. But Sandra Bland.
Down in Texas.
Texas. There's been a rash of another week. How many different killings have there been?
Let's see. We had Sandra Bland. We had DuBose. And I think I'm pronouncing that right. DuBose in Cincinnati by the UC cop. And then we had another one.
You killed two show intros.
Why'd you look at Harry and say we?
Yeah. Well, because we're part of the same team. I don't know what side you're on, Chris.
We'll see. Joe, we know what side he's on.
No, Joe's right. The other two heinous crimes were the first two intros that you decided to abort, in fact.
Oh, it was definitely an abortion at the beginning of this show.
It's okay. We didn't get to 10 minutes, so it was still first term. It's just fine.
Oh. Now, the Sandra Bland, let's kind of recap the case for those that aren't familiar with it, because it just seems fraught with error and weird things. For instance, you know, the first time I really heard about it, because I wasn't really paying close attention to news or anything, because we took a little break, and I saw the mugshot conspiracy on a conspiracy site, and I was like, okay, all right, let me look into this. I was like, they make a compelling case that the mugshot of this woman, she could be dead in the mugshot. So it doesn't make sense why a woman who's locked up overnight in prison in jail on a traffic violation would kill herself.
Well, that's not why she got locked up.
Oh, okay.
Like she got so that's why she got stopped.
Start from the beginning, I guess. Yeah.
So Sandra Bland was driving near where she had gone to college. She'd gone to Prairie View A&M in Texas, and a police officer had pulled her over. And to my knowledge, what his suspicion was, well, I mean, it's just a basic traffic violation. It was the changing lanes without a turn signal.
Yeah.
And pulls her over. Doesn't like her attitude. She is smoking and not respectful of
the badge.
Yeah, she doesn't give what he deems to be the proper level of respect. And to a point, even without the badge is the reason maybe not the only reason, but she was not friendly. Yeah. Not friendly. She wasn't cordial, if you will, with the officer. Ultimately, though, he wrote her a warning citation. Mm-hmm. And when he was going, he went up to give it to her and then asked her to put out her cigarette. And then she, being a civil rights activist, a history of such types of activism from...
Yeah, 10 different run-ins with police in Illinois and Texas.
Yeah, which is actually where she's from. And then she went to Prairie View and A&M, which is a historically all-black college. And she actually had over $7,000 in pending fines back in Illinois that were unpaid. Now...
But none of that makes her, in my eyes at least, a criminal or,
you know, deserving of what happened,
deserving right, of yeah. death. Well, so yeah, I think the knee jerk is like, oh well, she's been in trouble with the cops 10 times because she's an activist and she, you know, is just she's
con- had marijuana in
right,
her system.
Yeah. So she lots deserved to it. Die.
Yeah,
she had lots of marijuana in her system. Right. So they, he asked her to get out of the car. She being, you know, familiar with the with the Constitution and the,
her rights.
Yeah, her rights. She decides to say, "I'm not under arrest." Clearly, because she'd already been issued the citation, she was mm-hmm. free to go. And he argued with her. It got heated. Eventually, it got to the point where he said, "Get out of the car, or I will tase you. I will light you up." And so then the video continued for a little bit longer. And eventually, she got out of the car. Witnesses videotaped it, and then, to my knowledge, he put his knees in her back, right? And that was the real issue. Yeah. He put his knees in her back, was quite physical. The police officer, while it was physical, the police officer alleged that she had kicked him, and mm-hmm. that was the reason she was taken to jail. She was charged with, at the time of being brought in, she was arrested with assaulting a public servant. Yes. And so they put her in solitary confinement overnight. She had made a phone call to her sister the night before.
Right. Yes.
And then the next morning at 7, around 7, I believe, she had been offered breakfast. She refused. Or no, at 6:30. Then at 7 o'clock, while in solitary, they went to check on her. She said she was fine and had asked to make a phone call. But when she asked to make the phone call, they said she couldn't be let out of solitary. They would give her a pin, like a pin code to use from the phone inside her cell room. Mm-hmm. Then someone shows back up around 9 to check on her. I think like 9:04, and she had committed suicide. And asphyxiation with a trash bag.
Yes.
Okay.
She had hung herself with a trash bag. And what's really the it's just so many things that are like, there's so many things that either this police station has the worst luck on the planet or there's something fishy going on.
Right.
Because shockingly, the video camera, like the surveillance and the security, stopped recording from 7:34, the time of the last visit, to 9:04, the time of the discovery of the body.
Okay.
So there's no video in that hour and a half.
Right.
Right.
They find her. She has, you know, during the autopsy, what they find is that she has an almost impossible level of concentration of THC for someone that has not taken a drug since she was arrested.
Yeah.
Which makes you think either she ingested it while, you know, since she had maybe a decent amount in the car, mm-hmm. which would also probably explain the conspiracy of being completely zoned out while she
right.
took the mugshot. Mm-hmm. But the coroner said it's all like they either are saying she had access to it while she was in solitary, which is highly unlikely, or she just stuffed a ton down in order to, you know, not get charged with a higher crime.
Right.
Which, you know, you can always create the fake narrative out of that, like that's why she was so resistant to getting out of the car, but not really. I mean, I think more than anything, she was a civil rights activist and was going to play this. I mean, she was recording it with her cell phone the entire time.
Right, yeah, and it was ordered to stop recording
yep.
during the, yeah.
Which is another.
Weren't there gaps in the dash cam as well?
Well, there were, so the audio was flawless, but then there were technical difficulties, but then DPS went ahead and uploaded a second one with none of the technical difficulties. You know, who knows? It essentially looked like it had been edited. Cars were like right next to the road,
right?
Then gone.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah, like disappearing cars are technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties are forgetting to put an SD card in a recorder. That is a technical difficulty.
Yes, not just editing cars out.
So,
and there were bystanders videotaping as well. And so she had quite a few cuts. She was pretty beaten up. And then she had, obviously, the marks around her neck, but then she was afraid her arm had been broken during the encounter, and then she also was worried about her back. I guess her back was in really, really bad shape.
Correct, yes. And she actually, she complained about that, too. Like
her sister.
Yeah.
Her bail was set at $5,000, so it was $500 to go and get her out post-bail, mm-hmm. and her family was in the midst of trying to raise the money in order to do it in post-bail. Well, you know, but her family being back in Illinois, it wasn't, you know, the easiest.
Tough.
You can't just drive down there and do it.
Right.
And so then they find her. But I'll tell you, the one that's just shocking to me is, of course, there's an hour and a half gap between the last time they're checked on and when she's discovered.
Yes.
I mean, that either is literally the worst, like, luck ever, or it seems so fishy.
Really broken arm and a hurt back and all that.
During the altercation with the police officer.
No. She got that during the altercation with the police officer, but I'm assuming 3 days later when she hung herself, allegedly, that she was still feeling the effects of that, or no?
Yes. Yeah. And to my knowledge, she had not received treatment.
To tie a bag around your neck and hang your, like, to me, it just seems like you would need at least two arms, you know, to make all that happen. And
It hasn't been proven that, like, her arm was broken. She just thought it was when she called her sister.
Yeah, but in a bag, too. So if she had, did she tie it around her neck and kill herself that way? Or did she hang herself with the bag? Because I wouldn't think a bag, a trash can liner would hold.
Yeah.
So do you know, like, how the bag was used to actually kill her?
If you give me a second, I'll pull up the picture. I'm pretty sure the picture... Yeah. Well, Harry actually probably knows.
And a lot of the things with the trash bag, like the trash bag that was inside the cell, like supposedly inside the cell, is not a regulation trash bag that should have been inside there in the first place.
Okay.
That is because it's too large. It's too large of a trash bag for that type of cell.
So they put like a 55-gallon trash bag when they should have put a 13-gallon in.
Right, something like that. Right. And the simple fact that the trash bag was there so they could clean up, but she's in solitary. What is she cleaning up?
Right.
You know, how much trash can you generate in solitary?
Yeah, that's... Hmm.
And so, they take people's shoelaces all the time and to make sure people don't hang themselves or hurt themselves.
Yeah, I mean, and...
And we're talking about a government agency buying trash bags. So we know these the trash bags they had to buy had to be the cheapest trash bags.
Oh, totally, yeah. Well, I used to be a janitor for the post office. Yeah, yeah. And it was the cheapest trash bags, the thinnest trash bags we could possibly find.
And I barely see trash bags nowadays that could put 150 pounds worth of garbage in it and not break.
It just does not make... It just... As a person who has struggled with depression and suicidal thoughts, to be quite frank, I just don't understand how she could get to a place in that short amount of time where she would kill herself. Like, it just... It doesn't... Just from a mental health aspect, I mean, for a basic traffic violation, I mean, and she seems to be a fighter. She seems like the type of person who, you know, they beat the shit out of me. I've got video of it.
Yeah, she couldn't wait to show her video.
She couldn't wait to publicize this. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't think that she would be sitting there going, oh, gee, unless something with the marijuana in her system that maybe she ingested it and that somehow depressed her system so far, but even then, have there been any reports of, like, significant job loss or related? I mean,
no, she's getting ready to start a brand new job at her alma mater, Prairie View A&M. Super excited about it.
Yeah, they're just from a mental health aspect, it makes no sense that this woman would kill herself.
Now, jail cell suicide does happen,
but
it's mostly males, and they usually have something. It usually happens the first, 4 hours that they're put in incarceration.
Right. Alcohol-related, they've made a huge mistake, like spousal abuse, or they've, you know, I mean, it happens, but women are much less likely to kill themselves. I mean, men make up, I think it's like 60 or 70% of suicides in this country.
The executive director of the Texas Commission of Jail Standards, Brandon Wood, he testified in a hearing, I think maybe just today, and he said that there were 146 suicides in Texas jails last year, in Texas jails, but 22 of them were just last year. So, yeah, definitely it happens.
CNN also reported that there was a document taken during it was during a jail intake form when she was brought in, that she had attempted to commit suicide in 2014 by taking pills. But there's a discrepancy on that because on a different sheet, the word no appears next to questions about attempted suicide within the same questionnaire or whatever. Which, how can, I mean, when you're being processed and all that stuff, you know, I don't know how closely you're paying attention to filling it out.
Right, yeah.
I know that when I worked with kids in a jail-like situation, it wasn't jail, but there was just like a standard 5 or 6 forms that we would have to fill out upon intake. You know, and it was a lot of times the person was getting in, they didn't want to be there, they didn't want to talk to you, they didn't know you, and you had to run down this list of questions that involved things like that. And a lot of times they gave you answers that were just kind of flippant because they were trying to get you off their backs and get in their room and kind of get settled in because they knew they were stuck. So you often didn't even get anything in depth or accurate until weeks after that person had been there, because at first they're just kind of blowing you off on these questions that were, you know, potentially serious.
Yeah,
sometimes.
I mean, it's a shameful thing. It's not something that I certainly share publicly or anything like that, but I'm comfortable with it. Like, I wouldn't think that she'd disclose that. I mean, was the was it at the hospital that they were coming in? Where was it, intake form, or was it a jail intake form where she disclosed this information? Because I can't imagine.
It was a jail.
Okay, yeah, that doesn't make any sense either.
But that's a huge jump for taking pills and committing suicide to hanging yourself.
Yeah.
Usually when women do commit suicide, it's usually from poisoning, because most women like to leave, they call it the quote-unquote the pretty corpse versus hanging, which, you know, you're strangulating, you're asphyxiating yourself, so you're not going to leave that pretty corpse. That's the stereotype of how women commit suicide. Usually when men do it, they do a very, very gruesome but very sudden suicide.
And a lot of the outrage is that there's been a pretty in-depth look at Bland's background. You know, they've vetted that, but there has been absolutely no release of the officer Insignia.
Yeah,
Insignia. I think I'm saying that right. And he, from all I know, is that he went to Texas A&M, graduated with an agricultural leadership degree, worked for I think ice cream or dairy as a production supervisor.
Bluebell.
Yeah, Bluebell. And then he went on to become a police officer, and then even at the time, or he's still, well, until now, a volunteer firefighter. That's basically, there's nothing about his track record.
Yeah.
Based on the way he acted, like, light, you know, I'm going to light you up for changing lanes and being disrespectful. And then when she said that she had epilepsy, you know, she was epileptic after he banged her head into the ground, he said, good.
Ooh. Yeah.
Twice, which makes me think, you know, this is not a, this isn't a guy that's very compassionate, or at that point he had passed the point of trying to not disrupt the peace.
Right.
You know, he was literally going, it was a vendetta for disrespect, and it was no longer about, was she a threat to society or, you know, the public.
Yes. Yeah. And that's also on the case of, like, because we've had, five different black people who supposedly committed suicide in jail cells this past month in July?
Yeah.
Even one happened that Monday after that Saturday, after she was committed suicide. Apparently a black woman committed suicide by hanging in, and was it Alabama or Mississippi? I can't remember one of those two states.
Yeah, I think it was Mississippi, but yeah.
I would think that would be fairly common. I don't know that maybe it gets more attention now because of this case.
Well, it's one thing, too. Do you commit suicide in a county jail or prison?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, are you going to commit suicide in the same people that are in there overnight for a DUI?
Let's think about the psychology of it. You know, it could be one way or the other. I mean, if you're in prison for a long time, then, obviously the psychology there is that you're going to be there for a long time and you're either resilient or you're not. If you're in a jail, like Harry said, within the first 4 hours, you're drunk, you just got arrested for beating your wife, you're depressed, your world is coming to an end, no one in your life will ever forgive you, you know, get it over with. I mean, that is where it would take place, but this woman just got a brand new job, she's got...
The thing is, she probably, that job's going away, period, just even if it's found that nothing's wrong.
Right.
Even if no crime, the issue, you know, all the press around, the negative press around that altercation, because it was as a ambassador for the university, like, you know, a role where you're going out greeting African-American kids, high-performing African-American kids, trying to recruit them to Prairie View A&M.
Well, why would it be seen negative? If you think about it, that's almost a positive. It's like, look, watch her step up to this cop that was clearly overstepping his authority.
Yeah, but
as I joked with Harry before you got here, Greg, I mean, when you're born black, you come out of the womb and you're handed your cop block card. Like,
it's stapled to the birth certificate.
Here's your right to hate police officers.
Oh, wow. Well, I just, like, you know, it's a big organization. It relies on fundraising. It relies on a lot of different things. Anything that's controversial is going to automatically, especially for a public-facing role only, is going to be seen as a negative, period. Because the trustees, the board, is going to vote that down every time.
But controversial in what direction? Like, if it's controversial in the correct direction, then it will, you know, generate funds. We'll make money.
That's not the way boards and trustees usually work, though. They're so cautious. I mean, they don't want to be champion. I mean, even when they're individual, like, you know, you look at University of Virginia, the board with the rape case. The board absolutely supported a president who was acted way outside the bounds, had no justification for acting the way they did, and mm-hmm. mandating courses and trying to essentially shut down the fraternity system. The board supported her wholeheartedly because that's the status quo on that issue.
Yes.
And in fact, the board is there to, you know, to act as the, you know, are we being rational? Are we doing the right thing? And they didn't, the board just frankly didn't want the controversy, period. And the only way to combat that, regardless of fake allegations, was to support the president for overreacting and, you know, acting on false information.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, if she didn't, it's like, if she didn't commit suicide in that jail cell, what attention would this would have got? She would just been released. She would have got out on Monday morning or Tuesday morning. She would have been released.
Yeah.
No one would have known. Hushed. Everything would have been quiet.
Well, it depends on what she decided to do with the information. If she decided to fight it and, you know, fight it in court.
But she could have sat on it. She could have sat on it. Just sat on it. Mum's the word. No one knew anything. She already had the job. They're not going to do another background check.
Let's make sure we get Joe in here, because sometimes it's easy to forget about the guy who's not in the room. Joe, any thoughts as you're listening to the discussion here?
No, I don't know. The whole thing just seems sketchy to me. The scene that I have in my head is the scene from Lady and the Tramp, where all the dogs are in the pound, and there's that like door at the end of the hall, and they know that when a dog gets taken into that room, the dog never comes back. and they're all talking about that. Like, I don't know. That's just the way that these prison things seem to me. And I kind of spaced out talking to my wife there for a moment. But that was my original thought when we were having the conversation about Bland, was that she, you know, just conveniently ends up dead. It just seemed kind of sketchy to me. Like, maybe she was just, you know, that the camera went off. She was just taken into that room where people don't come back from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels train.
What'd you say?
The Fields trains took me right to my fields.
Yeah, Joe, way to really bum everybody out, man. We were having this fun discussion about this woman killing herself, and then you brought her right down to zero, man.
Well, no, because I had pushed the mute button, and my wife just came home, and we were sitting there having a conversation, and so, like, that's what I was going to say, like, 15 minutes ago, and then... time me back in, I was like, oh, let me just throw that out there.
No worries.
Wow, the suicide rate is triple in county jails rather than state or federal.
Yeah, that would make total sense to me because of just the drunkenness factor.
Yes.
Huh.
Yep.
And it turns out she had just recently lost a baby, and I had made several Facebook posts saying that she was depressed and suffering suffering from depression. And, I mean, none of that. I mean, this is all, you know, it's all there's...
armchair psychology.
It really is. Yeah. You know, you never know. And we will. I doubt we're ever going to know. The FBI's been brought in to do it. And then there's also an independent review. Mm-hmm.
And the family has done their own private autopsy. Yep. But I don't know if the reports have been released yet.
Mm-hmm. Not yet, to my knowledge. It's just, man, this is something else. Washington Post Radley Balco, who we've hung out with, he said there. The mere trauma of sitting in a jail cell can be overwhelming. This was his quote on this issue. The mere trauma of sitting in a jail cell can be overwhelming, and this is particularly true for someone who has never been in one before. And that could explain the suicides by people who aren't facing serious charges. That it was an arrest for a minor crime may not matter. In fact, a sense of injustice can only add to the emotional damage. Somebody, you know, just the issue of the isolation, being cut off from friends and family, he said, is what, in his experience, has what's tend to escalate the situation prior to...
That would make sense,
prior to suicide.
Yeah,
suicides in local jails.
If she is suffering or battling depression, and then all of a sudden she's got this, like, new job that's coming and this new lease on life, and then all of a sudden she just knows that it's all going to kind of be pulled away from her.
It's just that her sister said she was in such good spirits after talking to her.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you would, maybe she put on a face, though. You never, you know.
No, I mean, there's, if the decision has been made, then a lot of times the brain, if a person has decided that they're going to commit suicide and they've made the decision, often the days leading up to, hours or days leading up, once the decision has been made to take control back, then that person becomes in good spirits.
They can seem, yeah.
Right. So, because they've got their power back. I mean, a huge part of depression is that you've lost your power. So what he is talking about makes sense, is that she's isolated from her family. She may lose this opportunity. She's swallowed this pot. They're going to find that out. It's all over. You know, nobody loves me. That's it. So I guess we've talked ourselves into it being possible, but
yeah, and then I guess really the question is, so what do you do about it? So how? What I mean, right. What reforms do you make? I mean, ideally, you don't have these situations whatsoever in cops that have the force and the ability to do such things and act out in such ways, but that isn't going to change tomorrow or the next week or the next year.
Exactly, because on the table, like whether she committed suicide or not, she shouldn't have been in that jail cell.
Right.
No, I mean, yeah, the cop was in the wrong. Absolutely. The Supreme Court has ruled that you are no longer under arrest once a citation has been issued, like the warning in her case. He continued it. And so by continuing it and by being offended by her not putting out her cigarette and giving proper respect, he antagonized her and provoked her, and it escalated. And then he should have known, you know, he violated, the USA Today reported, he violated policy. He should have walked away once he offered the warning and got back in his car.
Right.
And he didn't. Or if he had suspicion of something else, he had to totally reinitiate proceedings, and he didn't do that either. He just continued it on. And it was in the wrong, and it ultimately resulted in her being dead.
Correct.
Which is a complete injustice. And, you know, to me, I say, if you want to stop things like this, you have to create the proper disincentives. If you break the law as a police officer for not following the, you know, correct conduct, I don't know. I mean, what is the proper way to combat that? Is it... If, like in this case, you can't say he deserves to be put on death row because she hung herself. No. But what you can say, at a bare minimum, he deserves to be charged with... I mean, he deserves to almost be charged with abduction because he illegally kidnapped... I mean, illegally, it ended up in her being held against her will illegally. Correct. He should owe a financial compensation to the family, stripped of his badge, stripped of any pension, anything like that.
Yes.
And not allowed... In, you know what I'd say? To hell with it. Strip him his ability to register and own a gun.
Kill him! Oh wait, sorry. Too much, sorry.
Don't you feel like the cookie's kind of crumbling as far as like police go, though? Like,
Totally. I mean, Sean Hannity's on our side on this.
Wow, okay.
Bill O'Reilly, all the conservative commentator, Donald Trump, all of these guys, when they heard about this, there was an African American, who was just telling me about this? An African American comedian, new young guy. I was just out with him, and they were joking that he did a bit where he was like, surely Fox News is going to do something crazy, you know, and say that she was in the wrong. Every single commentator, Donald Trump, Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, all agreed that the cops were in the wrong on this issue.
Yep.
Which means that we've hit the tipping point of police brutality in the police state. We are there.
Yep.
It has become fashionable. And I think a lot of it is Facebook and the younger generation kind of leading on Facebook, the modern day salon where thoughts are shaped and molded in public opinion. It is the younger crowd who's liberal leaning, who is pushing us that direction.
Well, it's a victimless crime. I mean, if you're saying, well, she had drugs on her, well, it's marijuana. She had it on her, so what? Victimless crime.
Right, two states north, no one would care.
Yeah, she didn't put her blinker on, which is, and she got a warning. She didn't even get charged with a crime for it.
Right.
So she didn't do anything wrong there. Mm-hmm. So she literally died because she didn't do anything wrong by the letter of the law.
Right, yeah. And that supposed kick is like, well, she was assaulted first.
And she was being held illegally.
Yes.
She was being kidnapped. Or, I mean, well, whatever.
Yes, she was being kidnapped. She was assaulted and kidnapped.
Because he was acting out of protocol beyond any shadow of a doubt, she's being kidnapped and held against her will illegally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do we do to the girl that escaped in Ohio after like 12 years of being kidnapped and, you know, got out of the basement? What do we do to those individuals?
Right.
And that didn't result in death.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was talking about, though, is at... So when a police gives, when a police officer gives an expectation, and a person chooses peacefully not to follow it, or you know they're not doing anything that's like worth the use of force, and then the police officer says something like "I'm going to light you up." Once you've kind of crossed that line verbally, like the only way that you're going to, I guess, make your point or maintain a sense of authority is by using that force. But once you've used that force, then you've committed kind of a heinous act yourself. And in the age where like there's eyes everywhere and everybody's kind of seeing these things, it's almost like the authority that police have, that kind of natural authority that everybody used to kind of give them, is it's just not really there.
Well,
at this point,
the problem is that that authority has been abused, and you know, we go ahead.
But I'm saying that it doesn't really exist because it was all based on the fear that
of violence.
Of violence, exactly. And now all this violence has actually happened, and the abuse of power has been had, and people are realizing, like, well, it's just unacceptable. You know, so at that point, like, what, I mean, what power do police really have? That, you know, they're either going to be tyrants or they're going to be mall cops. And
well,
there's really nothing in between.
Well, even mall cops after, you know, the Cincinnati, you know, it was a campus cop that put a, you know, one-shot bullet through Mr. DeBose's head. Mm-hmm. You know, they, until... I'm almost for saying, I mean, you can't say you have to de-arm the police. You promote gun ownership, you know, an absolute right to self-protection, but your security force, whether private or public or however you decide upon it,
I just think
they can't be armed.
In Benghazi. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Within police, like on a national level, there needs to be a change in the culture.
There does. I mean, you really almost, and this is what happened in Ferguson after there was civilian oversight that was brought, you know, threatened to be brought into play, a civilian council for the actions of the police officers in Ferguson, Missouri, after Mike Brown. They all threatened to quit, and that's where you should call their bluff. Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, quit.
Please do.
Quit. There's probably a town that they'll just find a bunch of cops for.
It's a great job. I mean, the benefits are great.
Get a car.
You die in the line of duty less than a Walgreens night clerk.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not like...
I know this because I've been telling
you what?
I said I know this because I've played one on television.
Exactly. And Joe, you know, Joe mm-hmm. has played one, so he could get it if he wanted. I mean, we could always, mm-hmm. you know, we could hire, you know, we could hire the extras who've been cops because they, honestly, they've done it before.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, like they could try experiment, you know, like stop trying to have a monopoly on the police force and just try to let the free market make a police force.
Yeah. It's just
that kind of worked in Detroit. They've got private security in Detroit. I mean, the failed state project.
It's just that is going to be such a counter. That is politically so unpalatable right now. Even though we've got all this outrage, the majority aren't going to say. They might be. Some might say it's okay to just let them shrug and quit.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority are not going to say, well, we're just going to disband police forces and you get to hire your own private security firm. especially given the name private security firms like Blackwater have in the United States.
I'd love a brutalist security force.
Yeah, I bet you would.
Yeah. Now, there comes a tipping point where you have the moral authority and then you lose it, and so you resort to force. I mean, there is a very clear example of a politician here locally that has everybody just knows he's a scumbag. Everybody talks about what a scumbag he is. Everybody can. No one likes him, but he keeps. I'm not going to say his name.
State level or?
You'll know who I'm talking about in a minute. But everybody keeps, you know, supporting him for higher and higher office because they're afraid of him, because he's such a scumbag, and they all know it. They all have examples of it, and that's how all our politicians will eventually become. And they're getting there, you know, and cops are kind of getting to that point too, where, you know, there are decent politicians. There are good people that run for office. There are good people that serve in government. There are good people that serve in bureaucracy. I know Maya would disagree with that, but, you know, they just have not been educated as to the system that they are perpetuating. And once you do that, and once you send them to that re-education, let's call it a camp. Mm-hmm. Then
love camps.
Libertarian camps, libertarian summer camp, where they have. Then they'll understand.
Mm-hmm.
Police officers, there are good police officers. There are many stories of police officers helping people that you would never hear in the news, and you know, many of them. That's why a lot of cop block groups are actually very effective in sitting down with police officers, You know, the Keene police force has been totally transformed by the guys at Free Talk Live just by constantly sitting down and talking with them and befriending them and just saying, you know, have you thought about this? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about this?
Or have they just been so annoyed by the relentless libertarian onslaught that they just joined police forces in other states and communities?
Well, also the other fact that the Keene police department also changed opinions of certain activists. Cantwell switched his entire opinion of police officers from having that much interaction with police department.
Right. Yeah, the engagement, and you know, nothing good can come of enemy versus, you know,
but
that type of, like, you know, foreign occupation is never going to lead to, you know, warm and fuzzy police interactions.
Now,
it's not like we have to worry about the police having, like, dark black sites they take people to where, you know, no one knows about.
Yeah, where
only
they
in
might
blue states
where they might die and hang themselves with trash bags. That would be terrible.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I've been doing a lot of reading by from a woman named Brené Brown, who talks about vulnerability and shame and self-esteem and all that kind of stuff. And in one discussion, she was talking about why people have fallen out of why they are totally disconnected from politics. Why 30% of people are engaged in politics in the act of voting, and a much, much smaller number of us are listening to podcasts and engaged in politics on you know, a daily level and reading.
And, you know, philosophical level as well, rather than just, well, you know, we got to support the troops, support the cops, support blah, 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 blah.
And she theorizes that for most of us, we live in shame. And so shame guides our behavior. And so it while it keeps us from being fully authentic with everybody around us, most people strive to be themselves. They want to be themselves, they want to be authentic, they want to be known, because that is the key to connection. Healthy connections are built on authenticity and being courageous in sharing your emotions. Now, politics is the exact opposite of all of that, where you are creating a narrative, you're creating a character, you're crafting an image, and then you do everything you possibly can to maintain that image. And there is no authenticity, there is no shame, there is only control. And it is totally disconnected from what most of us experience in our daily lives. If you go to Washington, D.C., and you're around politicians, it's totally inauthentic. I can tell you, working in politics, people are phonies. It is all just hollow smiles. And we in our daily lives don't connect with those people, because If we did, as she said, in our personal lives what they do, we'd be fired, we'd be divorced, we'd be bankrupt, we'd be in jail, and they get away with it and we don't. And I feel like we're now at that point with, you know, of course, 10 stories over the last year like this, or 10 stories over the last 2 years, is not indicative of every police officer individually. But it begins to create a meta-narrative where they have super rights and we don't. Politicians, people in the government, people that collect a government paycheck get benefits that regular people don't. We don't have the same level of civilianship as police officers. If I killed her, then I would be going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody, you know, you look at Michael Brown's, the
Darren
cop
Wilson.
Darren Wilson, nothing happened. You think that would happen to Harry or you?
No.
Certainly not to Harry.
No, I would have been burned.
Right. So it's that really connected with me, because it just makes total sense, is that politicians and now police officers, you know, we're disconnected from them because they don't have to live the way that we have to live in our everyday lives.
Without a doubt. Like we it went from, you know, the idea was community policing.
Right.
You knew the police officer, you voted for sheriff, engagement. If someone was in jail, the members of the community knew, like, they knew the individual on a micro level. Now, what'd you say?
Andy Griffith.
And yeah. There's been such a drive of consolidation. You see it communities that what do they call it? Where, like, Irvington would be an example over in Indianapolis, where they have the Indianapolis Metro Police Department, but Irvington considers themselves their own little municipality, whether or not they actually are, because they don't provide their own services. And when that happens, it's an alienation that happens because the social bonds are broken down because you no longer know the individuals that you are. Let's say you are a real criminal. You decide to go out and take someone's property. Let's say though you do it and you don't live. You don't live in that community, which is pretty normal. Well, actually, no, it's the exact opposite of normal for criminals. Usually, it's someone you know that goes and robs someone's house.
Correct. Yeah.
And so in that case, the community. The more you know each other, they would look out and you wouldn't even, whether or not the police respond within the first minute, the community would be on watch and look out for each other like a community watch mm-hmm. program. But as these communities break down, as people no longer interact with their neighbors, it's just a total social cohesion that has infiltrated all the way up into the bureaucracy level. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just, and then we're just alienated from each other, and that creates such a level of distrust, we end up wanting to vote for more force because we're more nervous, so we need to feel protected. They have that super status because yes. You know what, I am outsourcing my need for self-protection to an agency that's better equipped, better trained. They can focus on it longer, and I don't know the guy. I mean, it's I don't want to know the guy. I live in Irvington, but really I live in Indianapolis, so what do I care if the cop gets a little too hostile?
Right. And conversely, because there is that lack of connection on a personal level, we're much less likely to give that person the benefit of the doubt.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We all know Barney. Barney just shoots himself in the foot every week.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that we all go back to Andy Griffith, but it's an easy thing to grab on.
Yeah, and that's an ideal we can't get to, but it should be the goal.
Right.
Or like that Council of Ten with Charles...
Charles Harrison.
Charles Harrison here in Indianapolis that they go out...
Ten-point coalition.
Ten-point coalition. I mean, they do amazing work, mm-hmm. what they do, and that's living it. Go out, community oversight, showing up.
But they live in that community. They all live in it. A lot of police officers, like IMPD officers, they police communities they don't live in.
Yeah.
They wouldn't dare.
Yeah, I don't live in there. Yeah, but they police it. They don't know any of the, they hardly know any of the people in there, and that's who they police. I do not like cops. I don't like them. But I'd rather deal with Lawrence PD than IMPD.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know a lot of the cops in Lawrence. I know them. I can see them. I can meet them at Kroger. Well,
there was a police officer that got killed here some point in the last year, and he had policed that neighborhood and that area for 30 years. And so when he was killed, there were just tons of stories of all the good that he had done in that community, and people. He was part of the community. He was a white cop
mm-hmm.
in a predominantly African American area, black area. Sorry, Harry.
Thank you.
Triggered.
I know. I am not from Africa. Never mind. There was mourning in the community mm-hmm. for a police officer that had been part of that community, and so maybe the goal should be. In cities like Indianapolis, for instance, keeping cops on the same beat for a long period of time, because even 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, walking the same beat, meant that you got to know, you got to see familiarities. And so if something looked out of place, then like Harry coming into my luxury condo. Never mind.
Well, a lot of it because a lot of the police officers, they stay in their cars.
Right.
They don't go out and actually do walk a beat. They don't go out. That's why most people have more conversation with a bicycle cop that's out bicycling. They talk to them. They can see them. They're personal. Most of the time, most people see a cop. They're on a highway generating revenue. They're out there being road pirates.
Yep.
That's when most people will see a cop. They're out there doing that.
Yeah.
But more good they could do for the community. They just out just walking around. Just go out and walk. And the simple fact that
go meet every person in your the police chief of police, go meet every person in your neighborhood.
Yeah. You need here's all the door handles in your neighborhood. You should be able to put a door hanger on everyone at the end of the month and do it again next month.
I want you to bring back a written report on who they are, who their family members mm-hmm. are, who all lives there, and not in a contentious way, where they go to church, blah, 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 blah.
Well, the other thing is people treat police like they're special status, and they do have special rights, so why don't we just make everyone police officers? It doesn't take that long to make one. Why can't everyone just be unpaid police officers?
Well... You would have, unpaid police officers. So
volunteers.
Essentially,
Indiana has the highest volunteer police officer force in the country. We have some of the highest.
We do. I just think that's an element of that'd be such a radical change, radical shift in current.
Everyone's a cop.
Yeah, I don't know that you want everyone's a cop.
Everyone's a cop.
Go experience yesterday in the Brutalism Rebooted group. See if you want everyone in there being one of, a police, an officer of the law with the same super rights as you.
Yeah.
Pulling me over, memeing my car.
Yep. What were you going to say, Joe? Sorry.
Do you want James Neese being a police officer?
Commissioner?
President. President.
Isn't he running for, like, judge of his town or something?
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah. Great judge. And then, Joe, you've got a close relationship with Brad Rogers, the sheriff up in, is it, what county is he in?
Elkhart County.
Elkhart County. And so, I mean, none of this makes his job any easier. This only makes his job way more difficult.
No, it doesn't. But you know what? He's the guy that's, despite everything, he's sympathetic to the narrative that's out there. He's sympathetic to the ideas that are kind of being molded by younger people. And he doesn't even see himself as a police officer. If you go back and listen on the Weird Libertarians page, he sees himself as what he calls a peace officer.
Yes.
So his whole perspective on his job is completely different than that of most active police officers.
Well, that's the question, is the element of prevention necessary in police officer? So we have, crime prevention. And so instead of just law enforcement, where they enforce, they are essentially the arm of the, they're the extension of the legislative branch, rather than being a proactive organization, would it be better to just have them merely be a detective, a group of detectives who, in the event that you are harmed, you have full access to, and they collect all the facts, do a thorough investigation, thorough report, and then are then at that point, once the report's done, are sent out to take you to the courts and get remediation from the individual that harmed you. Would that be more efficient, or is that even so far outside the lines? Because people would say, you know, people right now think there's a, right now, because police are out driving around, they think they're safer. Because you see a cop stroll by in your neighborhood, you think that you're necessarily safer. Whether or not that's true, if you change that dynamic to where now they're no longer patrolling, it's just that, hey, somebody shot, or, you know, someone robbed me, or I'm in the midst, you'd have to say, almost everyone have a life alert, I'm right in the midst of a crime happening, please be alerted, and then take them off the streets entirely. They're just sitting there literally like a service waiting to be called, like firemen.
It would be better, but like how many people see police officers in the midst of their crime?
Oh, it's always like 20 minutes afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, so you could make, but the thing is, you can never measure the uncommitted crime that was prevented because they were driving around. You know, like, would a crime have happened had they not driven through the XYZ neighborhood, and had that house gotten, would that house have been robbed? Or, you know, that's the argument that people, I'm not saying the truth.
Yeah, but that's all, and that's a terrible.
It's anecdotal, I understand.
It's terrible for the simple fact that they can't be everywhere. So wherever they are, they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
And we've created such a false narrative by giving them super rights and then giving them the ability to dominate the news cycle when they do something good.
Yep.
And then be hidden from repercussions and, you know, negatives when they do something bad, like in the case in Texas.
And allowing the culture of the thin blue line, that piece of culture, like anyone, any cop representing that should lose their job. What, they brought that us versus them mentality first?
Yeah,
thin blue line.
They did, and that has to go away. And like, there's no way of culturally do, because it's a cultural issue within the departments.
Right.
And there's no way of doing that unless you hit reboot. And then even assuming
it's only going to get stronger the more they feel under attack by society.
Oh well, then they're on the look, and like
even
that's
more
the thing.
Reason to reboot.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that it, with police unions. Is that even politically feasible? Because they will say they were the terms of their contract were breached, and they will sue and take it into law. And I don't even know. That'd be an interesting question. Is the law set up to where in the event everyone was fired, could it even be done? Because they would go to arbitration, an independent committee would review it and look at the law as on the books and the union rules as are on the books and the contract or the part of the laws within the state. And there might be – you might literally not be able to replace all the police officers within the police department because of the way the laws are written.
Yeah, probably.
Why are you laughing?
So I was just on Facebook, and I posted a photo that you took of Mittens looking at Harry.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote, oh, crap, my cat might be a racist. And James Decker wrote, Nine Lives Matter. Which I thought was funny. The award goes to Aaron Jones, who wrote, I just heard the doorbell, cat. Like, meaning Mittens is looking at you to get the door. So very funny. Funnier in writing, but anyway, sorry. We got to move on too because because of my errors, we're running short on time.
Go ahead and bow out if you're going to move on to the next topic, just because we have gone on as long as we have.
All right, Joe.
Joe, good to talk to you, brother.
You too, guys.
Best of luck, and I hope that you take me as your date someday to the Academy Awards. And then you give a speech that'll make everybody cry like Caitlyn Jenner at the ESPYs.
So brave.
Oh, take care, bud.
Maybe Belinda will be the keynote
speaker. Oh, we'll bring Belinda Ewart.
All right, Joe. We'll see you later. All right.
So brave.
Enough for people from the region.
So let's finish up. So let's finish up on this topic. Any final thoughts on this?
No, the only thing that's left to be I mean, it's been talked to death. It's now we're at the tipping point where when the Republican-loving, Captain America-loving, you know, we love our, you know, representatives in the community, Republican, like Mike Huckabee types and Santorum types are on the side of this, like our side, and even the Koch money, Generation Opportunities on the side of this,
right.
And it's criminal justice reform. All that's left to talk about are how do we do it? There's no changing the narrative anymore. That's been accomplished. It's
right.
What set of policy proposals are politically achievable and are aren't a radical change that would actually scare people to going back to something worse than we just left.
Right.
Because that's always the danger, is the blowback of a radical change is the grandma saying, you know, or the fundraising groups that exist within the political parties that are old and can be scared, calling for draconian laws that are worse than the ones we have.
Yeah, kind of like in Gundam Zeta when they went from like the Earth Federation Force to the Titans. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
All right. So let's touch on this kind of briefly because it.
You fear abortion so much.
It's a third rail.
It's a prenatal wound, Greg. Prenatal wound. I overheard a conversation. I was scared. No, I just, my inner fetus is crying out.
There's so much education though that needs to be done on it. Is the thing.
Yeah, it's just people have made up their mind on abortion, and there's nothing that we can discuss that we're going to change your opinion on abortion.
Correct.
All
right. Next topic.
Yeah.
Now, federal funds being used
to
fund an organization like Planned Parenthood because...
Correct. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
But again, I don't think that's even relevant because libertarians aren't going to want federal funds for Planned Parenthood or any other organization at all.
I don't know. The left libertarian movement, the ones that fall prey to Bernie Sanders.
Right.
You know, he is the false siren that's calling all the feels... The feels part of the Libertarian Party.
Right.
You know it's true. There isn't any denying
status libertarians.
Well, they say, you know what? That isn't going to change, so we might as well spend it on stuff we want.
Anarcho-status.
That's their argument. And, you know, we're not getting rid of the state tomorrow. We're not going to get rid of the state when, you know, if Ron Paul were to run as a third party and he somehow won, he's not going to be able to dismantle the state.
Nice has been on here many times and made that point.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, hey, let's take the money from war and put it towards education, and you know, we're not going to get rid of that money. Let's use it for good.
Yeah, for you know, increased wages or blah 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 for you know all these things. But now the problem is with Planned Parenthood is that Planned Parenthood has been getting their butt kicked in the PR war,
mm-hmm.
with the videos being released by the conservative activists talking about discussing harvesting, which is legal, which is for scientific research and approved.
Yep.
It's just the language that was used when it was caught on tape is enough to make even Hillary Clinton say disgusting, which is shocking because there's arguably no bigger woman's rights and champion of being pro-choice in America than her.
For votes.
Yeah. Yeah, I would, Hillary's been a feminazi since Yale, so I don't, you know, I think she's pretty consistent on that. She's learned how to tone down her passion levels when discussing women's issues, but she's still in there. Unfortunately, it's not going to result in any change because Rand Paul's put forward, you know, the amendment to defund it. And the issue is, it's been falsely portrayed in the press, is that since the 1970s, you haven't been able to actually use federal funds for abortion. like direct funds. The problem is those that money goes to Planned Parenthood. They're not allowed to use the federal funds for abortions. Right. They can only use it for women's health services. The thing is, it ends up being a, you know, they end up changing prices of other procedures to, like, that, you know, just by getting the funding.
Shadow
they,
games.
Yeah, they, yeah. It's,
accounting,
you know,
shouting games.
Yeah, they, you know, essentially they boost the price of other procedures and then subsidize the abortions with the profits made from the very money they received to even open up shop or continue to offer those women's health services.
Right, with the shadow game of showing when they, like, well, when you catch it, it's like, well, we did that to offer low-cost birth control.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they and it, but it's just, it's such a convoluted game. It's such a convoluted game of saying, well, we're going to give you money. There are conditions to the money that we're going to give you and how you can allocate said funds and what you can do with said money. But when you actually charge, you know, when you don't break even on the services you offer, you can turn around and be a self-sustaining type of institution and take those funds and use those as a not-for-profit grant of abortion. And that makes people more mad on the right than anything. And, you know, then, though, I hear a nun today come out, a Catholic nun today go, you know, it's really not that these people are pro-life. It's that these people are pro-birth. Because I am pro-life. I'm pro making sure this person can eat, using taxpayer funds to make sure this person can eat, using taxpayer funds to make sure this person's educated, safe, grows up.
Yeah, which order of the nunnery was she from?
New York.
Right, yeah. I bet I know which nun you're talking about, because she's always brought on. There's like this one group of nuns that I think like Pope which one was Ratzinger? Benedict. Called them out, and like they were, oh yeah,
they're the Sarah Palin of the nunnery. They've gone rogue.
Super. Yeah, that's basically what he said. They've gone rogue and they're out of control and they've lost their minds. They're
worshiping Lilith. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, praise Odin. Yet right. They're still nuns.
Right. They just were super. They're super a super liberal order out of New York.
Yeah, and that's to be expected because, I mean, quite frankly, the Catholic vote has been Democratic.
Right.
The majority of its existence. But the question comes down to, should the government, as a libertarian, philosophically, would you just assume block grant funds that are either going to be used to set up a government bureaucracy that is only going to grow, or would you rather block grant those funds to a not-for-profit organization to administer the services that, if they screw up or they're found guilty of, you know, misappropriation of funds or blah, 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 yada, 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 that you can defund and shut down and then give to a different competitor or a rival organization. And that's one of the pragmatic issues of the, you know, a libertarian would say, this is ridiculous. We shouldn't use taxpayer funds ever.
Yeah.
But the reality is, would you just assume have a government service provider that is only going to grow and need more funds over time? Or would you rather have organizations that through press wars can actually be shut down and defunded in time? Just as a, you know, that competition creates a better, you know, more fiscally conservative outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, as a libertarian, I would kind of support Rand Paul, regardless of the politics he's playing with the issue. At a bare minimum, I don't like Planned Parenthood's operating procedures. I don't like how arrogant they are. I think they misappropriate funds and purposely hide things. I think they do offer women's health services, as do about 50 million other organizations in this world. I just assume give it directly to doctors instead of an organization, so there's no administrative costs. I'd say, you know, you get $15,000, spend it to help someone you know in your community that needs it, or offering help to young girls or whatever it is, rather than why send it to an organization, especially an organization which I am suffering the ill effects of, because I posted an actual quote on Facebook from the founder of the organization, Margaret Sanger, who is an awful individual. Participated in support of Hitler's eugenics movement.
Person.
Started the movement in the United States of eugenics via the cause of choice and birth control, because she was concerned about the world's population being consumed by the ignorant underclasses of African Americans and you know, essentially the white trash and working classes out of Boston and the East Coast, the Irish.
Yeah, yeah.
So she wanted to, instead of just going about it saying being a racist, she recruited a group of African American, black pastors in the South for this project. And it got taken from her once it became a government project. And they started, you know, promoting the idea of you don't just have to be a breeder. And they started giving it out like birth control like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And to date, 14.5 million African-American baby or black babies have not been born in the United States since the invention and distribution of birth control.
Yeah. It's more dangerous to be in the womb as a black man than to be on the streets of Chicago.
Which is pretty unbelievable if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And now, does a woman own her body? Yes.
Yeah.
Without doubt. And I, you know, I am someone that would say I am, I'm pro-choice pragmatically because it doesn't mean if it's like alcohol. If we prohibit it, it's not going anywhere.
Sure.
It's just going to be, I'm just going to have formaldehyde in my whiskey.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just going to make it more dangerous and lethal. So it's out of pragmatism, but I just don't love I don't like it that we're not even giving it to medical service providers for women's health. We're giving it to community organizers in little cities who may or may not have medical training and medical credentials.
Right.
But they're a political organization, period.
Yeah.
They mm-hmm. started as a racial planning organization. They try to hide it. As soon as you bring that to light, you get banned for 3 days on Facebook for posting an actual quote about what her intentions were with the Negro Project in the United States.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's like abortion's one of those things that it drives me crazy. When people stop calling things what they are, that's when atrocities happen. You know, right. It's
yes. Yes.
You act like it's a procedure. What that video was and the reason it made people so upset, they didn't feel so good about going in and getting a mole removed.
Right. Yeah.
It was, all right, we'll take the arm for 75. We'll take the, we'll take the umbilical cord for 43. You know, it was the outright harvesting and dicing up and putting up baby parts on eBay only offline.
Of a human being. And it hits us in it hits us in our humanity.
It's the same sentiment behind law, Rick Perry wanting to pass a law where they had to see the ultrasound before they could decide to have an abortion.
Mm.
It's that same sentiment where when you ignore it, you know, it becomes much easier. And then you see the outrage, you know, blah, 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 blah. This has been, you know, they use everything. They use everything legal. They use everything. They tar and feather you for all the feels arguments and, well, I'm a woman and I got a blah, 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 blah. And
right.
Then at the end of the day, though, it's all just a way to evade the actual discussion of was it alive or was it not?
Right.
Correct. From the test that we've been able to test back for pain receptors of fetuses, that the farthest they could go back, which was like 28 weeks into a pregnancy, is that they know that the fetus does receive pain at 28 weeks. They're not allowed to test any further. So it's
the limitation is federally ban a federal ban on receptor.
Yeah, they can't test. They can't test. They can
no
test at 20.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. That's 28 weeks is
I didn't
early
know
as they
it was
can
a
test.
Federal ban.
Yep. And it's just
or essentially a floor. Like so, it creates a floor on how far back you
correct.
Can test.
And that as far as they can test pain.
Wow, that is unbelievable.
The other thing with it that is also the thing is that they're also not consistent. As you watch feminists and other women talk about how they should have the ability to abort babies and fetuses in the womb, they still want to get upset at businesses for firing women who do get pregnant like that. But it's like, whoa, whoa! I thought it was just a clump of cells. Why are you mad that you got fired then before getting pregnant? Oh, now it's an issue. Now it's a baby only because you want to keep it. Is that the only decision-making process on this whole thing?
Yeah.
And then, like, when they always start talking about, like, and yes, a woman does own her body, but then it goes into the question of, so men basically, like, they're talking like, you are trying to encroach on women's reproductive rights. It's like, well, I'm only wanting to question it because when that comes up to the case, then men have no reproduction rights. Granted, there is no way for us currently with medical technology for a man to actually like to hold a baby for 9 months. But it's just more of a putting it on the table. It's like, hey, I have no say.
And that's inevitable.
Yes.
Technology is going to advance to the point where, I mean,
they they've tested it.
At conception, yeah, we can probably.
Yeah, they have tested it so far on different like species. It's going to get to that point.
Yeah, that's an inevitable rise.
And with the transgender community, there's going to be a trans woman that's going to want to volunteer. They're going to have volunteers for this procedure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's going to be, you know, this is going to happen eventually. Men are actually going to probably, you will see probably in 30 years that they'll probably get reproductive rights.
Yeah. And well, then the question is, does abortion go away entirely? Because then the ending it is irrelevant when you are able to simply remove it, put it into, for all intents and purposes, a incubator, and then it is up for adoption before you see it as more than a mass of cells.
Yes.
Which is interesting, because then that solves a lot for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
The technology is the great healer, which so right. often, more than not, for the right, it's the great devil.
Yep. All right. Final thoughts on this?
You haven't said anything, so you have to say something.
Something.
Oh my gosh, he's gonna pass.
Oh man, that you can't pass.
No,
I'm waiting for the hate mail to hit my email box.
No,
at
I'm
Chris Spangle.
I'm 100% pro life. I don't believe. I don't believe in laws, in general, but I do believe in humanity, and I believe that our emotional and core reactions to those videos, despite whatever your political beliefs, you watch those and it just, you have a reaction to it. I think that's your humanity speaking out, and you can ignore that and you can legislate against your own feels, but there's
oh, I love it how just, the recorders of the video are the awful, heinous individuals.
Right.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that was to me like these guys committed, or someone even said they committed the crime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought.
Well, it's the same world where Chelsea Manning was condemned for putting out the collateral murder. Remember that video
they put out?
Yep. You're the bad person for releasing that tape. Not the guys in the Apache shooting down
there. No.
Sure, of course, because that's the easy deflection.
Sorry, aborting and Reuters reporters, sir.
It's not necessarily that it's even illegal. It's just because something's legal doesn't mean that it's moral or ethical.
I'm offended by that. Please, no one else can see it.
Now let's wrap up. Let's go to, let's give our final thoughts here on the show. Let's, Harry, you're first.
Okay. Let's see. Well, as much as like I love talking about the third rail of politics or podcasting, that was woo. but with the Senator Blankley, one thing I do want to get out, like I had a conversation with my sister, and I'll probably have a continuing conversations with her about the whole Black Lives Matter thing, is that the message sometimes when it comes to like police accountability or police brutality does get muddied when it talks about race. Mm-hmm. If black people keep it all like, well, you know, yes, black people are more proportionally to be harassed by police officers, but if we keep it as just this just black people, this is a black person problem, instead of trying to make it a, no, this is an America, this is everyone's problem, people won't tune in. They won't watch. They won't care. They'll get tired. They will move on. The whole saying is like, first they came for the communists and I didn't say anything because I wasn't a communist. Well, that's what's going to happen to the black community if you're just like, well, this happened to black people, just black people, mostly black people. Well, some white people, which is the majority of the population of the United States, are like, well, I'm not black. Glad it's not me. And then we'll just watch, you know, black people keep getting murdered and getting hurt by the police until you start showcasing. It's like, no, it's just police just doing it to people. Everyone around us inside the police state. That's what I've got to say about for that part of the episode. Also, let's see. Also coming up on a happier note, like you have Gen Con's coming up this weekend here in Indianapolis. I'm going to try to go to that on Saturday. Probably a couple of people to try to get a game going. Probably poke my head into like a couple of the changing LARPs. That is what I've been playing with. Hopefully I can get in and yes, I'm going to play a fairy. Yes, that's what I plan on doing on Saturday night, is playing a fairy.
There's nothing wrong with that, Harry.
Not a thing.
Harry the fairy.
I like to play, actually my favorite fairy to play is a boggin. That is a servant fairy.
All right, learning a lot about Harry today. Greg,
I had told Alistair and I and Ryan Connor that I would just touch briefly on Iran and Greece. They wanted updates on it. Apparently, that is a hot button topic with Wall listeners. They want so maybe next episode we'll do a real since Abdul's contribution to the Greece thing was a shoulder shrug and a smile.
Right.
Maybe we should go into it a little more, and then the Iranian nuclear deal, quote unquote. But for right now, it looks like Greece has been told they're not getting a bailout by the IMF, but they are, in fact, it's being offered by Lagarde. It's going to be, because she has said before, it's inevitable. The thing is, Greece can't cut much more. I mean, their debt is just flat out unsustainable. Like, they can't cut pensions anymore and keep civil society. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They can't make the little short-term pseudo agreement that was supposedly reached in the final hours is not going to make. It's just not going to do anything. So Greece eventually, as of now, they caved on the demand to win a chance at $96 billion, which is an emergency rescue plan. They cannot get their citizens to cut any longer. And to me, the only thing that makes any sense, and I've said it the whole time because this is just inevitable, is they have to take a minimum 5-year absence from the euro, institute a drachma, inflate the debt away, get their creditors to accept drachma so they don't just hyperinflate, and get it back to a situation where they can meet the budgetary guidelines of euro membership. If they don't do that, and if that looks like that it's never going to be sustainable and that Greece's economy is not going to be able to absorb the shocks and become competitive again in the European Union, they should just go on their own. They should go full Iceland, nationalize the debt, have the government create a special fund of drachmas that's a zombie fund, and recapitalize the banks and hit reboot. That's what I would have done, because, quite frankly, right now Greece exists solely as a zombie country to pay back the debts to the European Union and the members of the European Union. And they were dumb enough to lend it the first time. I can't believe they were dumb enough to lend it the second time. I don't even feel bad for Germany or France at this point, because they're just moronic.
Yeah, yeah. They did it to themselves.
Yeah. As far as the Iranian deal goes, I think it's a good thing. Everyone predicted that as soon as the sanctions were lifted, their newfound economic wealth would go to funding Hamas and making Israel mad. In fact, as soon as this was done, they have decided to cut funding. So they aren't going to just spend money in order to antagonize anymore. As always predicted, the Persians, the Iranians, are not jihadists. They want to be the dominant player in the region. They know the only way to do that is have great ties with the European Union countries and the United States. And they're going to be our ally in fighting ISIS. They have proven to be. Israel needs that same ally. So Netanyahu, he considers them the SS, he always will. His dad's the preeminent historian on the Encyclopedia Judaica. Like, they just hate the Jews or the Persians. So that's never going to change with Netanyahu, but the world is changing in the Middle East. The tide's changed. This is a great, great sign, because if they change, they will get Turkey to quit. Turkey has been cooperating with ISIS in allowing the flow of oil out and allowing them to self-fund. This will cut that off, because now they will work with the Iranians, because now there's more oil to flow out. It's all in all a good thing. Don't listen to the Republicans talk about how it's going to be the Holocaust again.
Right.
They're not crazies. Khomeini is the hardliner. He's the old crazy kook grandpa that has power a little bit right now, but the rest of the ministers and the assembly and then the people in Iran are
tired of the shit.
Yeah, they just want a chance to make money. Right. So they are not crazies. And when Khomeini dies and the power structure changes, radical Islam goes away. Because I can guarantee you the Shias are not going to allow a bunch of radical Sunnis to come after them. Mm-hmm. It will be iron-fisted.
Yeah.
And they have given a blank check to Iraq. So look for Iraq and Iran to form either some sort of confederacy in the long term, or just that to become part of the greater Iran.
Very cool.
I could go for the cheap oil.
Yeah, it's already $2.17 a gallon.
I know. I filled up my my tank with my 1.3-liter high efficiency motor, helping out the environment, with $2.50 a gallon of premium.
That's great.
Donald Trump's a maniac.
Ah.
The guy is cuckoo, batshit, and crazy. I don't get what is up with the hat. I don't know if it's like a play, so we don't see his hair, but we know
it's
the hair.
Hard to pull off that hat because that hat with like the you know the
it's
the
like fucked up tracker's hat.
Yeah,
or
but
yeah.
Like it's old school.
We had to have some like some commercial thing to sell.
He's
Rand
always
had
those too.
Rand had the Ray Bands. He needs a. He's got
the Rand Bands.
Yeah, Rand Bands.
He's got the crazy old man hat. Yeah.
But it worked. Like Donald's always wore that style of hat. And then he put "Make America Great" on it again.
What if you could buy that hat now?
Oh no, they're sold out.
Oh, sorry.
They've sold out at the Trump. That's at Trump Plaza in New York City, is where they were the only place they were sold, and they were gone immediately.
Hey, did somebody put the ISIS flag on top of the Trump Tower in Chicago, or was that a Photoshop I saw today?
Oh, it was a Photoshop, okay. I think. I mean,
I don't know.
You see the ISIS flag from time to time in various places. Like they just caught two sympathetic ISIS supporters in Key West,
yeah,
Florida. I mean, the problem with ISIS allowing anyone to just declare themselves a member is they get Bush leaguers, you know, yeah. They get the.
So what about the Libertarian Party? What?
Sort of like this. Sort of like we're libertarians.
Yeah, we get. They don't get though three chances at terrorism. We get three chances to record a podcast.
Yeah exactly. Donald Trump's a maniac, and I posted an article from Psychology Today a week ago, about Donald Trump and why he is so popular. Because it just doesn't. I don't think it makes sense to most of us.
I get it completely.
But it goes back to what we talked about earlier, where there's this inauthentic strain in politics, and that people don't feel that connection to politics, and that they want to punish politicians. And Donald Trump is exercising in the American voting public that punishment. He is keeping everybody seemingly accountable, and with this veil of authenticity and plain speaking, and he's just, for instance, when asked by CNN anchor Don Lemon what his strategy would be in the upcoming debates, Trump responded, "I am what I am. I have to be myself. If it is not good enough, that's okay. I'll go on to other things. I'll ride into the sunset and do some more buildings and create more jobs, and that's okay. I'm doing this because I want to make America great again. That's what I'm doing." You know, and then he goes on in the interview to rail against Romney and Obama, saying Romney was catastrophic. He was terrible. You can't rely on pollsters every time there's a question. You know, they spend millions and millions of dollars to formulate the best possible question. And it doesn't matter what Donald Trump's stances are. It's his style. It's that he's railing against the things that we all hate, and exercising the demons a little bit and giving them he's like our collective punishment on the American political system. And yet he's exactly what we deserve in the American political system. If you've never studied, there's a bunch of different personality disorders. You know, there's borderline personality disorder, bipolar personality disorder. Those are the ones that
dissociative.
You know, those are the ones that we kind of commonly deal with in our daily lives. Are borderline and bipolar. There's schizophrenic. There's disassociative. There's
libertarian.
There's libertarians. look up histrionic, and let me see if I can pull this up here real quick, because the problem with Donald Trump is that he's just another breed of mental illness. So, you know, we've got the narcissistic personality disorder that rules our politics, and then you throw in the histrionic, and it's so crazy. So when you histrionic personality disorder is characterized by a long-standing pattern of attention-seeking behavior and extreme emotionality. Someone with histrionic personality disorder wants to be the center of attention in any group of people and feels uncomfortable when they are not. While often lively, interesting, and sometimes dramatic, they have difficulty when people aren't focused exclusively on them. And so you go on, and it just seems to me that fits Donald Trump like to a T. You know, just interaction with others is often characterized by inappropriate, sexually seductive, or provocative behavior. We've had that this week from one of his ex-wives. Is highly suggestible. Well, that's probably not him. He's probably not highly suggestible, but be careful when you're being seduced by the personalities in politics that seem like they're giving the comeuppance to the political state. It feels good. It feels good when Bernie Sanders lets them have it. It feels good when Ron Paul lets them have it. It feels good when Donald Trump lets them have it, or Sarah Palin. But James Neese lets them have it.
Oh, God.
You've got to tie it to philosophy. You've got to understand what you believe and not just go along with the emotional impulse of supporting Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump just because it makes you feel better. It exercises that part of you that wants to punch a politician right in the face. A guy like Donald Trump gives us collective power back because we feel powerless over our own politicians. And the problem is that we don't need a Donald Trump. We don't need another mentally ill freak show to come in and exercise power. You just need to get off your ass and do it. So, there.
You have to say, have you ever seen someone with such an innate feel for the news cycle?
It's unbelievable.
It's literally incredible. He can't open his mouth without dominating the news cycle, right. And it hits a chord. I said... When he announced and he said he's not only going to build a fence in Mexico, he's going to make the Mexicans pay for it. I almost jumped up and was excited. Even though it's ridiculous and totally counter to what I believe, it's everyone else would say, oh, how much is that? They'd get bogged down in the details, and he is so, so confident.
Forget the details. They're paying for it. I'll send them the bill. He's why we love the Joker the most. I mean, The Joker is my favorite Batman villain because he's chaotic evil. Donald Trump is political chaotic evil. The reason the media loves him is because you know he's... I mean, the ratings and the hits have to be off the charts whenever Donald Trump is mentioned because that's what they lead with, and Donald knows that.
You can't get on the news as a Republican candidate right now.
No.
You cannot get on the news no matter what you do, and Rick Perry's trying to pick a fight with him to be like the counter.
Right.
And that doesn't matter because Donald has a picture of when Perry came to kiss the ring in New York and saying, he was a loser then, he's a loser now. And you're just like, yeah, yes.
And it's so seductive because you want, but could you imagine that guy being president? And that's
why. Because he wouldn't have any control.
Right. And that is why.
So selling things.
Totally. Yeah. And that is why. Donald Trump will never actually write. You're right. Will never actually make it to the primaries. He just wants a spot in the debates. He just wants the attention. And that is why he polls the worst against Hillary Clinton and Rand Paul polls the best. Mm-hmm. You know, but you don't hear Rand Paul, and in fact, his campaign's imploding.
Well, they just now there was a counterpiece. So that came out the same day he announced a huge fundraising round from top high-tech libertarian.
Good.
And then they ended up opening the kimono, and like the two guys that were called out ended up doing the actual interview together and talking about how things are great and we're in this for the long haul and here's our actual strategy. And it's all about it's building little pods of volunteers.
Gotcha.
Instead of dominating news cycles, which is interesting because then one produces votes, one produces donations overnight.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So that is my take on Donald Trump. I just, you know, he is exciting and he's entertaining and he is fun and I love watching him because it's like with James Neese, man, there's something about that guy that you want to watch the world burn. You want the order to be upset because your life is boring and he makes it exciting, you know.
And you don't like I like watching Trump. Yeah. I love watching the Donald, and I think he's wonderful for politics because politics has changed. You know, when Newt got mad at the press in the last GOP round in South Carolina, he made John King look like a bitch. And to see that Republican crowd go crazy for the guy that's Mr. Moderate and literally created Romney Care as an alternative to Hillary Care and act like he's the conservative king. And then when Herman Cain comes out of nowhere, because Herman Cain hits those same chords, Donald just recognized it and said, by God, I can do it better because he can.
Yeah.
Like he knows how to win.
Or
win the news.
Because the voting public is desperately crying for any authenticity, to the point that we will put an absolute blubbering idiot like Sarah Palin in higher office just because we want somebody that we think might actually be a human being.
Yeah. You're so and Donald is that's what's funny is Donald's the ultimate flip-flopper.
Yeah.
He is good friends with Chuck Schumer. He's got multiple pictures at like the Clinton White House hamming it up with Hillary and Bill. And yet, you know what? You don't even care because he just walked in with a giant sledgehammer and started hammering people.
Right.
I literally, anyone that talks negative about him, I mean,
just posted
Univision,
Twitter status about
Univision backs out of an endorsement deal for Miss Universe, and he says he's going to build a wall between the United States and Mexico and make them pay for it. I love revenge, and to see revenge done as well as Donald does, it's beautiful.
It's magnificent, mm-hmm. and he's Teflon because it just doesn't stick to crazy.
No, and he's got the worst background of flip-flopping of any candidate in the Republican Party running right now, and none of it matters.
Nope.
Well, because he can. He's financially capable to do it. None of them are.
We've never seen a guy be totally on his own dime.
Other than Ross Perot.
Yeah. And he's doing it better than Perot because he's... Ross Perot was great, but he was a nerd.
Right.
And Donald Trump is
a fucking superstar.
No one's even talking about would be the oldest president elected.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and yet... Or no, he'd be like by a year, he'd not make it. But like he's 70, you know, he's going to be 70.
He's 70?
Going to be 70. Yeah. And yet you think he's got the energy and the drive of some, I mean, he makes Ted Cruz look boring and old.
Yep.
He really does.
And yeah, Ted Cruz is following his lead like some whipping boy, and it's hilarious.
All right. Well, that is the Donald Trump hunk.
Trumpertarians.
All right, kids.
I'm going for Vermin Supreme. I'm sorry. I want my free pony.
I'm all in on these nuts.
I'm
fully behind these nuts.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
I just want to want my pony. I'm going to name a rarity. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome.
If you have not heard, D's Nuts declared that he's running for president, a resident of New Hampshire, I believe.
Got him.
And I just can't wait to see how big his staff is when he opens his new headquarters in New Hampshire. Mm. All right. Thank you for joining us. Be nice to everyone that you meet.
Except for Caitlin Kapetsky.
Except for Caitlin Kapetsky and Donald Trump. I was talking with our friend Aria, and I said, "Listen, man, you just don't get it. I love every human being matters." She goes, "Except Donald Trump," and it was the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. So, all right, kids, you know this is a nice episode. It was a good episode. We got all kinds of hilarity and information in here. But as always, we promise
to do better next time.